This is the official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the official EFL podcast with me, Mark Clement, as we look ahead to the return of a full EFL fixture programme. Following exertions last weekend in the FA Cup, when seven Football League clubs so far saw up higher division opposition. And we're going to meet the manager who pulled off the biggest shock of the round.
Yeah, I think the one thing I reminded the players after the game, and when it did calm down a little bit, when they started having chairs and doing things, when they come back out, I said, never ever let this day go out your head. Never, because these days in football, unless you're at the elite level, don't come around very often.
Plus, first up, the Sky Bet Championship head coach, who's back on familiar ground.
It was great because my three children were born, well, my youngest AJ was born here, but they were here and my nan got to spend a lot of time with them while I was playing here. So it's so nice to be back.
It's the official EFL podcast. 1 point and one place above the Sky Bet Championship relegation zone just before the World Cup break. Hull City turned to one of their own. Liam Rossini played for the club for 5 years. In that time, reached the Premier League, the FA Cup final, and also Europe. And so far, so good, Liam. I'm just looking here. One league defeat in 8 and now 7 points and 6 places above the relegation zone. Are you happy with that?
I think it is. I think I've been delighted with the performances of the players, most importantly, and it's given us a really good platform for the rest of the season. Obviously, your first job when you go in and the club's just above a relegation zone is to try and get out of that as quickly as possible. We're not fully out of it. I don't think any team is fully out of it. Like, at the same time, I don't think there's any team without a chance of the playoffs as well, because the league is so close. So I've been delighted with the start, and hopefully we can finish the season in a good place.
Have you just piled pressure on yourself there, mate, by suggesting that not only have you got one eye on making sure you're escaping the wrong end of the table, but you have definitely got aspirations at the other end still this campaign?
Yeah, I think there's no point of being in football if you don't dream, if you don't aim for the very best that you can. If you say to any team that's 6 points out of the playoffs, you want your manager to believe that you can make it. And I believe in this group. But what I'm sure we have to do is keep working really, really hard, keep putting in the performances that we've been putting in, and we'll see where it takes us at the end of the season.
Do you feel different? I mean, obviously you had your interim period at Derby, as they called it. Does it feel different to get a job in your own name on a permanent basis? Do you feel different about yourself?
Not particularly, no. I won't change who I am for. It doesn't matter if I'm a manager, a player, assistant manager, kit man. It doesn't matter. Everybody should be respected. So I don't feel any different that I'm now a permanent manager, so to speak. I just keep working in the way that I always work, keep trying to treat people with respect and honesty, and then we'll see where it takes us.
Well, the connection to the city. And first of all, can we just explain, because you do have a family connection there, don't you? Yeah. Do you want to just explain that for everybody who might not know this? Because there's therefore two threads to this, isn't there? The ex-player, but also the family connection.
Yeah, my nan moved to Hull probably 35 years ago now. She moved up here for work. And I always used to come up here as a young boy in the summer holidays to see her and my auntie Sarah as well, who still lives here, with my cousins Mia and Jade and Kiri. So we call them Hulligans in our family. They're Hull born and bred. So when I first signed for the club, my nan actually was a season ticket holder watching the games before I came. And then I signed for the club under Nigel Pearson and surprised her. I took her to Toby Carvery in Willoughby and said, look, I'm signing for Hull. So she couldn't be happier with that. And she came to all the games and I got to take her to the cup final. She sadly passed away. The amazing thing is she passed away pretty much a year ago to the day when I took the job here. She was buried at Cottingham Cemetery. We're at Cottingham's training ground here. So literally a year ago to the day, I was up here, you know, celebrating her life. And then a year later, I become the manager of Hull City. So it's a pretty amazing set of coincidences.
What a lovely story. You're quite a skinny man, bearing in mind you frequent Toby Carvery's, Liam. You're doing quite well.
I wasn't doing the eating.
Fair enough, mate. And the other part of this actually was, as a player, you used to stay with her sometimes as well when you were
in the spare room.
Great.
it was great because my three children were born. Well, my youngest AJ was born here, but they were here, and my nan got to spend a lot of time with them while I was playing here. So it's so nice to be back.
Yeah. So is that? I mean, obviously you've mentioned the Cottingham connection, the training ground, but that adds an extra dimension to this, does it not? And I guess there is that kind of spirit of Nan floating around you sometimes when you're at work. She must pop into your head occasionally.
She always does, especially when the supporters sing the song about her. But yeah, I'm really lucky to be here. I know what this football club's about. I know what this area is about. And I want to make her proud from up there, and I want to make this club successful. So it's a massive motivating factor for me.
Yeah. Tell me about your owner, and I want to make sure I get the pronunciation right. Akon Ilikali?
Ajun Ilijala. That's my best go at it. Ajun.
I so wish we'd had this conversation before I started saying his name in the way that I did for the last year or so that he's been involved with the club on various BBC outlets. Tell me about him.
He's an unbelievable guy. One of the nicest, most passionate, authentic people I've ever met in my life. And that's why he's had a huge success in his life and what he's done in Turkey. You know, he's a people person. He's always looking to make people happy. He's very generous and he cares about people. So we've got on great so far. He flew me and my wife, Erica, to the World Cup final, which was incredible and something I'll never, ever forget. And he's a good man. And he's someone that you want to work for, and he's someone that you want to really, really do well for.
I think you can see the incredulation on my face there, Liam, and the fact that I didn't say any words for a few seconds there.
Yeah, it was incredible. You
to the World Cup final. Wow.
Yeah. It was like a week before. He just called me and said, I'm taking you and your wife to the World Cup final. Take a bag after the Sunderland game. You're coming with me. And I just didn't know what to say. It was incredible, incredible experience.
Wow. And he's got lofty ambitions for Hull City. There's no question.
Yeah, he does. And that's why I'm here. I want to work for a club that wants to achieve, you know, wants to get promoted in the end. And we're really aligned in how we go about that process and what it takes. So, yeah, he's really ambitious. I want to work for people with ambition who dream. One of the great things he's done is completely reconnected the fan base to the club, which has been fantastic for me. The attendances are really increasing at a rapid pace. He's paid for free travel for the fans away from home so they can get to the games, which I think is incredible. So it's a real club that I'm enjoying working for. And he represents the values of the history of this football club, which is togetherness and spirit. So I'm really happy to be here.
You have this energy and enthusiasm, which obviously carries you along. I wondered how much what you experienced at Derby County with all the problems of points deductions and very low resources has kind of shaped your mix going forwards. Through the hardship of those Derby fans and the club, what have been the benefits from your point of view in terms of what it's added to your mix?
If I was to speak about all of the benefits and the positives from such a difficult experience, we'd be here probably for 4 hours and everyone would be falling asleep by the end of the podcast. But no, I think you learn in adversity how important honesty and trust is, and being authentic to what you believe in. And also the concept of improvement. When Wayne was manager, I was assistant manager, we had to be creative. We had to get young players in the team, but we had to believe in their development and believe that they could get better. I think that's the art of coaching. So now it didn't matter if it was Phil Jagielka at 39 or Curtis at 38 or Liam Thompson or Malcolm Ebiaway when they were 18. We wanted to improve them. And that's what I want to do here. It doesn't matter. I want to improve every player, because if you improve individuals, you improve the collective and you improve the team. And I've already seen some really, really good signs with that in my short time here so far.
Yeah. I mean, in any case, a championship squad is a blend, is it not, of some local produced, some Premier League loanees, players that perhaps have gone the long way around through non-leagues and come through. And then you kind of sometimes lesser known imports that some of whom work, some of whom don't. You're always dealing with a huge variety of players from different backgrounds.
I think that's one of the things. You have to understand the journey. You have to understand the background of each player. That's something that myself and the coaches work really, really hard here, is not just to go out on a training pitch and coach the players and expect them to connect with us out there. We do a lot of one-to-one meetings. We care about the players genuinely. We want to know where they've come from. We want to care for their families. And when you get that trust and connection, then people buy into what you want to do. I love listening to some of the players. I'm learning all of the time from, we've got players here from all over the world, and I learn about their culture and where they've grown up, and it makes me a better coach and it makes me a better person as well.
Give me an example. What pops in your head?
Well, the best example is understand. So one of the best examples for me was I've got Ozan Tufan here and Dodo Sinic, who's just gone out on loan. We went out to Antalya for a training camp, and it was incredible training camp, the facilities, the hotel. But it was brilliant to experience, it was Dodo's home city, but it was brilliant to experience his culture and where he comes from and why he is the way he is by living that and being in his. He was basically our tour guide when we were out there. So he was taking the players shopping and making sure they were looked after. And it's all different, loads of different things. You've got Mika Seri here, who's an unbelievable footballer. But I understand his background, West African. You know, I understand where he's come from, how hard he's had to work to get the career that he's had. There's so many different types of people here. You've got Louis Coyle and Jacob Greaves here. They're from Hull. They're Hull born and bred. And they've got, I love the mentality of people from Hull. It's a working class city. And it's got working class values of, and it's got there's a toughness about the people here, and there's a resilience about the people here. So it's understanding players as people first before we start talking about systems and tactics.
How tough is the job?
It's hard when you don't get the results that you want. It sounds really strange. I'm not being arrogant. I love this job. I don't find it difficult. I don't find it difficult at all. I enjoy it. Maybe in 10 years' time, I might say something different. But I love this job. Every time I wake up in the morning, I'm looking forward to the day ahead. I don't find it difficult. I don't find the process difficult. I don't find, even if we have a difficult result and or something doesn't go our way, I'm constantly thinking about how I can improve the team. I think we get hung up as coaches too much on results and not performance. And that's one thing I'm massive on here is we always speak about the performance first and then the result as a process of the performance.
How much you have to manage your own energy levels, because just telling us the story of the backgrounds of some of your players, it's quite clear your levels of commitment. But as much as football will be in your head, I'm assuming most of your waking hours, sometimes we've got to zone out, have we not, in order to reset and regroup within ourselves.
You have to. You have to switch off. You cannot be on it 24 hours a day, because you just become your decision making becomes weak. You don't have a clarity in your thought. And that's something that I've learned very, very quickly. For example, I'll be really open. We were meant to do the podcast yesterday. And I said, I was so low from being outside and I needed to sleep. I felt a little bit under the weather. I need to make sure I got my sleep in. So I feel really, really good today. But I had to take that time to rest. And I'm really fortunate my wife, Erica, allows me to do that. I still get time with her and the kids. But I think a crucial part of management now is managing yourself and your own energy levels.
Yeah. How old are your kids now?
Leia's 15. She's doing GCSEs at the moment. And Mock, she's going through that. Mate. Izzy's 14. And AJ's 12. So, yeah, it's, you know, it's a busy house. But it's really nice when you come home, you can switch off and find out about their lives, you know, which is really important.
I feel like we're doing the full family journey at the moment, so it would be remiss of me. Obviously, I used to work with your old man, Leroy. Is he still in your ear? Does he play much
always.
Part? In, always,
yeah,
right.
Always. Not now. He loves football, so we talk about football. I spoke to him yesterday. He always wants to know how I'm doing. We always catch up about the family, but he's loving it. His enthusiasm for the game is always the same, and he's always got little nuggets of wisdom to give me because he's been in my shoes. You know, but he's also aware that I'm a different person, of different ideas. But he's a great person just to pick up the phone to and ask for his opinion on things as well.
But does he also, is he self-motivated on that front? Is he always digging out your games, trying to watch them? And then you've just made your mind up about something, then you get a phone call from him. So I was just noticing, and actually, you know, you could press a bit quicker in the, you know, as we come up to half time or whatever, his little...
He's not that. No, he's never been like that. I'm really lucky. My dad has never really put too much pressure on me or kind of tried to micromanage me. He just wants to know if I'm okay. And then he's more of a listener. So he'll know if I bring up something, then that's what he wants. That's the right thing to speak about. But he always just wants to make sure that I'm okay, make sure I'm happy, make sure the family's good. He doesn't really go into systems or tell me what I should or shouldn't do, which is fortunate.
You seem to have... such self-direction and such drive. Do you ever get lost? Are you ever unclear about which route to take?
Always, especially at the moment. I've got to be honest, we played against Fulham and on the weekend I made 8 changes because the squad deserved it. Our training levels have gone through the roof since I've come in, and those players who haven't been in the team have had a huge influence in terms of the culture we're trying to build. They deserve their chance. The problem I got now is they play so well. I've got a team to pick on Saturday against Huddersfield, you know. So yeah, it is. You're never clear it all the time in terms of this job. You're always trying to take in statistical data, your own intuition and feel on players, and then you come to your decision. But I always make sure that the decision I make is on a Friday and not a Saturday. So as soon as my cutoff point for naming the team will always be the day before a game, because then everyone's clear, everyone knows, and you can't go back once you've made your decision.
And you know, when you, there will obviously be a mini league of clubs at the moment, say, of teams you are competing against to make sure you're not in the bottom three come the end of the season, respecting the fact you've also got one eye on the other end of the table. How do you manage the importance of those individual games without putting all your wares out on the pavement so that you've got some sort of backtrack? Because presumably you play the big card and go, listen, guys, this helps us get away. It's a massive, massive game. But then sometimes things are not going to work out quite right, and you need some sort of, swivel room to maneuver.
I don't talk about the result with the players. I never speak about the result, never, because it's not about the result. The result is a part of your process of your performance. So the way I speak to the players and what I speak about constantly is how we play, what we need to do to improve, and knowing that the end result is a product of the work that you do day in, day out. So I won't ever go into a game if it's an FA Cup final, or the players know. You're a professional footballer. You know you want to win a game of football. That's the easy thing for me to say. Imagine, lads, we have to win this game. It's a big game. They already know that. But it's how do we go about winning the game? What do we need to do? And I'll constantly focus on that. And it helps me stay calm, because I'm not focusing on, it could be a great day if we win, it's a terrible day if we lose. Normally somewhere in between. As long as I'm focused on how we play and how we can improve, that doesn't really come into it.
Liam, lovely to chat to you. I'm a little bit concerned. We've name checked lots of the family. Have we got everybody away? Because I don't want the wider family listening and then you're in bother coming Easter gathering or something.
My mum, Karen, she's massive. So okay. Say hello to her. She's, and also my wife, Erica, she'll kill me. But if I don't say anything, she's amazing. And I think that's really important. I think there should be more things done about actually how important the role is of players and coaches and managers' wives in the game, and the amount of strain they have to take on. Maybe that's an idea for you to do a show on. I'm giving you ideas there, Clem. Because honestly, if I come home and I'm stressed, it's normally your partner that has to take that.
Oh, is she sort of radio television? Yeah, no, I'll tell you what, that could be a nice little panel, couldn't it? The football managers' wives do a sort of episode of the Officially AFL podcast on that. Is she a good talker?
Of course she is. She's a great talker, but I'm not saying her in particular. She's quite shy. But I do think there needs to be more work done, honestly, in terms of how people don't see families and what families go through in terms of moving clubs, in terms of there's a kind of thing around wags, which I don't think is fair, because some wives and girlfriends are so intelligent, great people in their own right. I think more should be done around the culture surrounding footballers and coaches and managers as well.
Yeah, and I guess she's the shield too, because she will hear stuff sometimes in the stands if she's there supporting you and kind of decide what she tells you and what she doesn't tell you, and have her own suit of armour.
She filters for the children. My kids are old enough now, they're teenagers, they're on Twitter and Instagram and they get messages and see things. She has to support them when I'm away. So it's a massive thing being a partner of a football manager or a football player. I think we should talk about it a little bit more.
What a fantastic insight. Enjoy home. Thanks for joining us on the Officially AFL podcast.
Cheers, Clem. Take care.
The Official AFL podcast with Mark Clement.
It has not been a good last few days for the Prince of Wales. And in an exclusive interview, we can talk to the main architect of that pain. I'm talking, of course, of the Stevenage manager, Steve Evans, whose team so magnificently dumped Williams' beloved Aston Villa. out of the FA Cup. Do you see what I did there, Steve? It was almost a moment of satire, was it not?
Well, it was brilliant, wasn't it? You know, I just ignored Prince William's calls all evening because he'd been giving me some stick, wouldn't he?
And let me be quite clear, mate. Yeah, you won't be on the honours list anytime soon, will you, after that?
I don't think it will be, no. That's, and any chance I did have, which would have been nil, is less than nil after beating them. So, a great win against a great club.
Yeah. Where's it rank, Steve? I mean, 1,000-plus games as a manager, where does it rank in all that time and experience you've got?
I think I've said, Clem, it's obviously got to be right up there. You know, I've been very fortunate in my career to have some absolute wonderful moments through great owners and players and staff and everything and people around every club I've worked for. But, yeah, I think to go away to your Premier League club, you know, a very healthy support there for both teams, particularly ourselves, and see us have a game plan that we would consider which was conceding territorially for a long period of the game. And then getting to appear in the game if we're still in the cup tie to change it. And the change is evidentially what?
I have to ask you as well about the celebrations. I mean, I'm still traumatised. Rotherham's playoff win at Wembley with your singing and God knows what. But we had Gareth Ainsworth with us last week and he said it's very important that you do celebrate as a squad those moments. I mean, obviously, it was a great high in the careers of all your players, but important too for you to get right in the thick of it and feel the atmosphere and feel the moment as a reward for all the work that you do, Steve.
Yeah, I think the one thing I reminded the players after the game and when it did calm down a little bit when they started having cheers and doing things when they come back out, I said, never ever let this day go out your head. Never, because these days in football, unless you're at the elite level, don't come around very often. I think there's probably one other club that I can spring to mind that went away at a Premier League club in recent years. Other than that, it's been a long time. So from that point of view, it ranks up there with me in memories, and it should rank with those lads. And a lot of them are far too young, Clive, even to have babies, never mind grandbabies. And I've said to them, you know, make sure you keep all the footage, all the podcasts, particularly, you know, from you guys and others, guys that are known to all of us, and keep them and show them to your kids and grandkids when they're old enough to understand just what it means.
Yeah. And Aston Villa, you said what a great club they are. They were really magnanimous with you and they were really humble in the face of that defeat. They treated you well?
Yeah, listen, they were fantastic. You know, the couple of the board members from Aston Villa came down to find me in the tunnel, got me pointed out and said they were, you know, they were as disappointed as they could be, but, you know, they wanted to come and say, well done, good luck, both in the FA Cup and our campaign to try and get into League One, try and stay on the shirttails of Leyton Orient. And so from that point of view, very humble. The manager, this is the manager, Clem, who's beaten Bayern Munich and Juventus in the last 12 months. Yeah. And tactically described it as a masterclass when he did. We won't describe ours as a masterclass, but he was very, very humble and gentlemanly afterwards. And I think it's a lesson to all of us. Me, amongst many, many other who struggle with defeat, I'm better now than I was, but an absolute class how they conducted themselves.
Do you almost have it's funny to switch tack, but do you almost have a sort of protocol, a little routine you do in the face of defeats now rather than just live them emotion by emotion? I'm asking this question right now because you mentioned you've got better in processing disappointment.
Yeah, I think there's no doubt I'll get better, Clem. I think it's maturity. I think it's old. I think even if I go back as recently as 8, 9, 10 years ago, It was never me and my team that was to blame when we got beat. And we lost lots of games. It was first and foremost referee, assistant referees, fourth official, assessor, television. It was everyone. And but that's just because I was hurting so bad. And maturity and grandchildren and things like that come when you think, oh no, I'm not getting any younger here. In fact, I'm getting older. And I now need to be portraying standards. They're now coming to games, especially little Joseph, he comes to the games And I can't be coming out Mardi when we lose a game and seeing a little fella who thinks I'm part of his big world. So there's a lot of things behind it and some good staff as well who helped me enormously. But we're in a good place now. So, and if you're in a good place, you know, if everything's Tony Stewart, chairman at Rotherham used to have a great saying in the, back in the day, which was, if everything's good behind you, family, health, your work, your players, everything's good behind you, you can just focus on what you need to attack in front. So that's helped enormously.
Yeah, well, there's a man who knows through personal experience, sadly having lost his wife a couple of years ago as well, of just the reality of that situation. It's a lesson for us. It's a lesson for us all as we go through those challenging, for us mere mortals that need normal lives, not like you, Steve, but the first few weeks of January, we tend to beat ourselves up.
I think you're right to touch on it, Clem, about family. You know, it's during the COVID periods and that, you know, I lost my mum. I was on the training ground, got a call to phone home. I left it, I finished the session. And by the time I came out of the session, she'd gone. So we all have things we now look on and it's differently. And, you know, I can't dread to think what you've been through, bud. I can't dread to think.
I was talking about Tony Stewart, obviously.
Beat yourself as well. We've all lost loved ones.
Yeah. No, 100%. I thought it was important to underline that. I'm just going to dig you out. So in future years, when your grandkids get this podcast back out, we should name check James and Mimi, shouldn't we? Because you've given Joe a mention.
Joseph is eldest, then there's James, and then there's Mia. But her family name for her is Mimi.
Mimi.
Yeah, we call her Mimi. Yeah.
Okay. I just want to make sure everybody gets a fair go there. Listen, before we move off Villa, you renewed old acquaintances because obviously one of the stories of the season for me has been Emi Martinez winning the World Cup and his exploits. He was on the bench for Villa. You had him on loan in your time at Rotherham and you had a little catch up afterwards as well.
Yeah, we did. You know, I think I said it leading up to the game, Clem. I don't think we played more than a fingernail, if a fingernail, in Emi's career to be the World Cup winner. But in Emi's words, not my words, we played a very pivotal part because he was making a decision to go on loan out of Arsenal at a time he'd just almost broken into the first team, but they wanted him to gain a little bit more. So we signed him and he was outstanding on and off the pitch. But of course, he was on the bench on Sunday. And we didn't really make eye contact or acknowledge him until the end of the game because he's focused on being prepared and ready. I'm the same when I go out just for kickoff and I'm focused on our team. But at the end of the game, his words were very complimentary and he's just a stunning young man. And I did say to him, I've said to others, one aspiration I've got is to go to Argentina with him for a holiday because that looks fantastic. So
I think the combination of the two of you together, that could be a little bit too wild for most of us, Steve.
Yeah, I think it could be. I think I'd need to get it by the missus as well, which would be quite difficult. So
I think we can take it that Mrs. Evans is out at the moment in which
she's out.
Steve's recording this and making this suggestion. Listen, it's double congratulations because you signed a new contract with Stevenage as well in the past week, in stark contrast to poor Prince William's week. Which rather begs the question about football managers and fit, Steve, because it never ceases to amaze me why sometimes what looks perfect on paper, I'll give you an example of Chris Wilder going into Middlesbrough, doesn't work out. And then other occasions like you and Stevenage just has been, well, it's been manna from heaven, hasn't it, Steve? It's been a brilliant period. You and the club.
Yeah, it has been. I think it was a real difficult test we had when we went in, of course, because the club had been was in a precarious position, had been for a few years and really fighting at the bottom end of it. But I met the chairman. I've known the chairman probably 15 years, but when I say I know him, Clem, it's you meet a lot of people and you nod and you wink and you shake hands. But I didn't know him essentially well. But he called me up and just said after he'd moved Paul Tisdale on with a meeting and I met him and we went in and we got the boys organised and efficient and they were brilliant. We stayed up very, very comfortably looking back. And then we had a strategy in the summer just to reduce substantial numbers in the first team squad, keep the same element of money. Chairman's going to add a little bit to it, and then try and sign some better players. And so it's a very simple strategy, but a very clear strategy. We didn't want to run with 35 first team players in our first team squad. We wanted to run by a number just early in the 20s.
But I guess my question about the fit of a manager with a club is how accurate your own personal radar is. Because you've been to some before this, I would say Mansfield, going into Peterborough, even Gillingham. I'm sure there's reasons why some of those work better than others, but you must have gone into all of those thinking, yeah, this could be right for me. So why is it that it just sometimes doesn't work when everything seems perfect on paper v sometimes does?
Yeah, I think there's different circumstances at different times, Clem. I think it was a big decision to go into Mansfield because I'd just come out of Leeds and we'd done particularly well at Leeds from where they were. Yeah. But I met John and Carl in Radford and they're very, I still speak to John every week, certainly every week, if not two or three times a week on WhatsApp or on the telephone. Great family. And yeah. I think I'll be honest, we were as good a certainty as you could ever find to be promoted when we come out of Mansfield. And we come out purely for the love of Peter United for me. My wife's family's been in Peterborough, the season ticket holders, a lot of them. I'd always wanted to manage it. And I've been offered it in the past, but when I was offered it in the past, quite before Mansfield, it was never right for me. I was either at Leeds or Rotherham flying, and it was never right. And when I wanted it, they didn't want me. So the first time that the stars aligned, if you like, is at that time. I do look back and think, did I get that right? No, I didn't. I didn't get it right. I should have seen the job through at Mansfield for the Radford family. And the Mansfield supporters get a bit stick now, but they're turn up in mass numbers for the level. They're great people. And I should have stayed there. And when I went to Peterborough, it was a two-year project, and I got a year. And it was disappointing, even when I look back now, and Darren knows my views on this, to come out after a year fifth, sixth in the league. I think the chairman's view was we weren't playing so well. He didn't see it really carried on to being a genuine promotion challenge. And the one thing I've always agreed, Clem, with owners is, if you own a football club, you get the right to pick who your manager is. You get the right to pick who you sign over and above your manager because you do the finance. And it's no different to a home here. Me and my wife, so we get to reserve the right to who comes in, who doesn't, who we're friendly with, who we're not. And so there I felt it wasn't working, and there was rationales they put in front of me. I could understand some of them, but so we parted and we're best of friends. I speak to Darren all the time. And I come out and I'd been offered a couple of jobs that I thought long and hard about and didn't turn them down. And then going into Gillingham was coincidence. I was actually in Dubai on holiday and I got a phone call from Paul Scally who said, would I like to have a chat with him? And he said, oh, you must be away at the minute. I said, yeah. He says, well, when are you back? Because I go back to England next week. Yeah. He says, where are you? I said, I'm in Dubai. He says, so am I. So,
well, he lives there, of course, doesn't he?
He stayed there at the time, the chairman. So within half an hour, he arrived at my hotel. We're having a coffee and says, sunbathing. We've gone inside for coffee. And it just felt right. It seemed right. And for the first couple of years, 100% it was right. And I think COVID was a major problem for everyone at the football club. And I think, you know, a number of things changed, both with the chairman and both myself and a parting in the ways was inevitable. And I think the chairman's right. It should have come months before it did, both ways. And so I come out of there and I was going to have a break, to be honest. And then I got a call from the chairman and said, would I go and meet him? Obviously, I'd seen the media that Paul Tisdale was going. Paul was a friend of mine. And so I actually rang Paul in the meeting to see Phil Wallace. And he just said it. One of those clubs that didn't work for him. But good man, good club, fantastic training ground, which I knew, and infrastructure, which I knew anyway. So I went off and met the chairman and became more of an open mind after Paul Tisdale told me that. And then we both chatted for two or three hours, and then we said, we'll both go away and see how we feel later today or tomorrow morning. And then later that evening, the chairman rang me and said he really wants me to come in. What did I think? And it just felt right. So I was in within a couple of days from then.
Yeah, and I just want to drill down on this, and you don't have to name names, but with every opportunity that you have taken, does it always feel right, or have you ever taken a job where you think, yeah, I'm going to go with it, but I'm not sure?
Yeah, of course. I think every manager that's managed 4, 5, 6 clubs like I've done, I think there's times you think, right, I'll run with this and see where it goes. I think it's only when that experience either continues or ends, can you look back and think that what it didn't work. It felt right when I was in it. It didn't feel right when I was in it. But every one of those clubs I've managed, I have no regrets. I've met some great people. The best thing about every one of those clubs is the fan base. The fan base at Crawley, if I start there, and Rotherham, Leeds United is just an oil tanker that's on its own. They're formidable. Mansfield, Peterborough. I've been very lucky. The Gillingham fans, I was buzzing this morning when they announced a new signing because, wow, do I want to stay them up? I've got a lot of personal friends that I met in Gillingham. So the signing the boy Dieng, as you know, from Exeter. And so I'm really pleased for the fans, really pleased.
I'm just looking at your league position and you are in that lovely, perilous place, I think, of having this magnificent cushion. But as we found with Forest Green last year, that can sometimes be a challenge, can't it? So how are you feeling around that? To be 12 points clear, or let me just make sure I've done my maths right. I have 12 points clear of fourth as things stand. Great. Takes a bit of pressure off you. But then is it a different set of motivational skills, Steve, to keep the boys on it?
Yeah, I think we've different objectives. I think the clear objective is to try to stay next to Leighton Orient as close as we can, because I think it's only 2 weeks ago, 2.5, 3 weeks ago, Glenn, I felt, and I genuinely still felt, they were going to be the Forest Green. They were going to run with their weight. And people say, well, are you playing a game? No, I'm not. Richie's done a great job. Martin Ling's recruitment policy last season and this season has been fantastic under a good owner, who I do not know, but you look at the quality of player, you look at the manager, the coaching staff, Paul Terry, get in there. You look at it all, and I've said, if we stay in the shirt tails of these guys, we'll do all right come the end of the season. But 12 points can very quickly go, as you know. I mean, I'm following a game last night, but I'm actually watching it on the iPlayer, and I'm watching Bradford go 1-0 up, probably should be 2 or 3 up. And if they win that, they cut that gap to 9 points, and we lose, they win it weekend at 6. So 12 points is good to have, but it's not enough.
I want to run a few general EFL lines past you, if I can, please. I'm going to start in the Skybet Championship. New owner at Coventry City, his name is Doug King. He's taken an 85% stake. He's a Warwickshire businessman specialising in oil seed processing. Now, listen, they've had a difficult weekend on the pitch, beaten by Wrexham. But off it, this is surely the news that Coventry City supporters have been hoping for a few years now, Steve.
Yeah, not only hoping for, deserving of. You know, I think we've all been to the Rika Arena. We've all been there and seen 25 and 26,000 supporters for Coventry City, who absolutely love and bleed the club. And what they've got, they've had a manager overachieving, in my opinion, Mark Robbins, for 3 or 4 seasons now. And now he's got someone who's got Coventry's, I'm told, I don't know if it's true, but I'm told he's Coventry, you know, inside him, Coventry City. So
yeah, 100%.
So I'm of the belief that with the management structure they've got in place, I know the chief exec really well. I know the chairman. I don't know if that'll continue, obviously, with the takeover. But really, really people that care hugely about that football club. But I'm pleased for Robbo, and I'm hugely delighted for the supporters. It's brilliant. And it's another one where I'll look for the sort of issues up on the ground. I don't live too far from there. You know, I could be there in an hour. And I love going there on a midweek night under the lights. You're queuing to get in off the M6. You're queuing to get out and you're watching really good football.
What a wonderful storyteller you are, Steve. I was nearly there with you in the passenger seat there with you for a moment.
Yeah, but it's true, Clem, isn't it? And I'll tell you why the other dear memory holds of me, because When I was first contacted to Leeds United, I actually went to one of the worst games ever at the Rico. I went to watch Coventry 0, Blackpool 0. And I was in the queue coming out, and they treated me very well, Tim Fisher, the chairman. I was in the boardroom and different things, but I literally left. And I was in the queue to get out, and there's a mobile number come up. And I said, hello, on my dashboard. And this guy said it was Massimo Cellino. So I cut it off. Because as a manager, we all got wind-up cards. I cut off. And then I've just got onto the A14. It's completely true. I've said it many times. I've just got onto the A14. And a Leeds number comes up. And I know a Leeds number because commercial I used to deal with a lot of Asda head offices. 01132. And that came up and I thought, can't be. So I answered it. There's a young lady saying, that's Leeds United Football Club. I've got Mr. Cellino for you. And I was like, phew. And so that was also the day I was at the Rico. So great memories.
Wonderful. David Wagner's the new man in charge of Norwich City. Are people going to say Stuart Webber, the technical director, is running out of ideas there, or will they take it as a good, genuine appointment, despite the fact it hasn't quite worked for him at Schalke and Young Boys in Switzerland? That, you know, this is the man that restored Huddersfield to the top flight for the first time in half a century.
Yeah, and as you know, Clem, he came into Huddersfield at a time we were just down the road at Ellen Road. And one of his very early games, of course, we beat them, but he got revenge back later in the season when he came to Ellen Road to win. But he's, I'm told he's a fantastic coach. I only know him at a distance. But the one thing about Stuart Webber is he's got a lot of decisions right. He's got enormous credit in the bank for me, both at Huddersfield and Norwich. You know, when he gets Dean Smith to come to Norwich, everyone in football went, great appointment. Everyone, great appointment. And it's probably particularly hard on Smudger. I think they were fifth or sixth in the league when he gets the chop. That for me is really harsh. But I can remember when he first went, I said to my lieutenant, I said to Paul Rain, I said, David Wagner, for sure. He's out of work. He'll be looking hugely successful what he's done before in English football. And so therefore it just seemed to me a good fit.
Yeah, definitely. Fit, you've used the word again, and you also mentioned Dean Smith there, who again, it looked like a great appointment when he went great in. Fit. Sometimes it just doesn't work. Fixtures this coming weekend then. Early kickoff, Blackburn in third. Played 26, still no draws. They head to Rotherham, just a point above the drop zone. 3 o'clock kickoffs include Burnley, the leaders, 14 points clear of third. They're at home to Coventry and their new owner, Doug King. Middlesbrough against Millwall is 56. Michael Carrick, best managerial start at Middlesbrough since Brian Robson in 1995. David Wagner's first league game with Norwich is at Preston. Sheffield United in second entertained Stoke, and fourth placed Watford are at home to Blackpool. Into Skybet League One, Darren Ferguson returns to Peterborough United, rested and recharged for a fourth spell, Steve. That's a story and a half, is it not?
It's an astonishing story. I think anyone who goes back twice, sometimes to a football club, people raise an eyebrow. Three times, it's two eyebrows. And the fourth time, they've run out of eyebrows, haven't they? You know, it's... but, you know, I listened to the chairman's words very carefully. He said when they wrote out the DNA and the fit of a manager to replace Grant, who can argue? Who can argue with Darren Ferguson? His promotions from League Two to League One, League One to the Champ. And Darren probably felt, and I know he came out and put it on record saying he didn't feel as if he got the support in the Championship when he was at Peterborough United, but they're in League One. So I've spoken to Darren a couple of times in the last week or so, and I think he's only got one focus, which is do his best to mount a real promotion challenge in the weeks ahead. But if you wrote out the DNA of who you would put in, and his name's not Ferguson, it's not Darren, and he's not been there three times before, he stands out head and shoulders above everyone.
Yeah, he's got a bit of a job on, mine. I think that top four are looking pretty solid. With no disrespect to Bolton, but Derby obviously on a good run of sitting fourth at the moment. The other story from League One I wanted to talk to you about was, I think, just a brilliant example of supporting a teammate and team spirit. Bristol Rovers, the staff and the squad are going to shave their heads this coming weekend in support of Nick Anderson, one of the players, diagnosed with bone cancer in July, had a tumour removed in October. He's now undergoing intensive chemotherapy. They're doing it on the 16th of January because his squad number is 16. Joey Barton and his staff, all the players. I mean, that is a tremendous gesture, is it not, Steve?
Yeah, it is. But it's befitting, isn't it? I think anyone who's part of that dressing room, part of that team led by Joey, of course, it's just befitting. And, you know, Joey Barton, as you know and I know, Clem, like I do, we're probably two guys that get a lot of stick. But inside, Joey Barton's a very thoughtful man, a family man, someone who cares passionately. And, you know, so I've got no doubt that Joey has led that. And it's more importantly, from my perspective, all our thoughts and prayers are with that young man. And he comes through what's going to be an almighty battle, they tell me. So we really, really hope and pray that the big man up above, you know, just looks at him fondly.
100%. Bristol Rovers at Accrington Stanley this coming weekend. Fifth place Bolton Entertain. Portsmouth, we're still waiting for news of a managerial appointment there. Sixth place Barnsley are at Charlton. Derby won three of the last four. They go to Cheltenham. Two big games of the weekend. Third v the leaders. That's Ipswich against Plymouth. 7 points between them at the moment, although Ipswich do have a game in hand. And Wickham play Sheffield Wednesday. Of course, they are another one of the giant killers in the cup. Last weekend, beating Newcastle, that is seventh against second. Into Sky Bet League Two, Steve. And Gillingham, you've already paid tribute to them. I mean, it's a pretty perilous situation that they find themselves in there, is it not?
Well, it's a difficult position. I think every Gillingham fan in the country would have been watching what was going on at Bradford last night and Rochdale produce, which Rochdale do season after season. Unbelievable results. Unbelievable. It's no surprise, of course, who you see gets the goals, and Ian Henderson. He's just been a goal machine all his career. But it's a massive game for Gillingham on Saturday. Hartlepool, I think in real terms, are 7 points behind in real terms if you look at goals, etc. But they're going to do some very aggressive business in January, and that's the words of the new owner, Clem. They've signed Liang. I wouldn't be surprised if there's another two or three named today. You can't come out and tell the Gillingham fans you're going to be aggressive and sign one or two. It's got to be five or six. And I think if Neil Harris gets that, Neil is a really good manager, a tough competitor, and I think they'll be fine. I think they'll be fine if they manage to get the players in.
But need to get going, really, don't they? Because you do not want that. What is a 5-point gap at the moment to the club above them? Actually, it's 6 points to safety. You don't want that getting much bigger. I want to finish on a remarkable story. And I don't know if you caught this over the weekend, but after their win over Doncaster, Leighton Orient tweeted, "You're only here for the Parrots," rings out as today's attendance is announced as 7,402, 384 travelling fans and 50 parakeets. I don't know if you're aware of this, Steve, but
no.
A flock of 50 parakeets circled over the game for about 10 minutes on Saturday afternoon. If we're not familiar with parakeets, I believe there's 115 species of them. They are a seed-eating parrot of small size, slender build, and long tapering tails. And they have become more and more common, certainly around London. I think they started to breed in Kent about 40, 50 years ago. It's an extraordinary sight, you know?
If I'd have been stood where Richie was, I'm old enough to remember the film called The Birds. And I don't mean Gilly Birds. I mean the birds that come and chew your head off.
Alfred Hitchcock, the old classic movie.
That's the one, Clem. So I shouldn't say I'm old enough, but I am old enough to remember it. And I'd have been looking, thinking I'm going to sit at the back of the bench. There'd have been staff at the back, players in front. Take your chance.
I loved the story, and I loved the fact that Leighton Orient embraced it with that tweet. You do see some extraordinary things at football matches occasionally, don't you, Steve?
No, you do. But listen, I think we went to Leighton only 2 or 3 weeks ago. They're a really good club, good people. typical East London people, you know, they're in your face, they want to win. It's what Glasgow regions are famous for. So it's all around the country, I can't say, because Sheffield, Newcastle, Manchester, Liverpool, it's London, the South Coast, it's everywhere. But they're a really good club. I think they're probably in the best place for years in terms of league position. Richie's doing a great job. Martin Lane, they've got really good players. So, yeah, they are someone we're just trying to keep on the shirt tails of.
He fixtures this coming weekend. Then fifth place Bradford head to Wimbledon. Fourth place Carlisle at home to Newport County. As Steve's already outlined, Gillingham Hartlepool is 24th against 23rd. Stevenage head to Harrogate. Leighton Orient entertain sixth place Barrow. There's another tussle at the bottom as well, which is Rochdale in 22nd against Colchester in 20th.
It's seventh massive place. Games.
Massive games.
You know, Rochdale, Colchester, Gillingham, Hartlepool, absolutely massive for those football clubs. And you know what? A defeat won't put any of them down, but a defeat for one or two will cause a problem for sure.
I wanted to say to you, actually, as manager, do you play the must-win card with your players because they are massive games, or don't you in case it turns out wrong and you've played your trump card and you've got nowhere to... How do you balance that off, Steve?
I think you just balance it off by talking of the importance of it. You know, I'm one of those managers, Clem, that stole it from a very famous manager, but I've copied it in saying that 3 points in August is the same as 3 points in January, 3 points in March, 3 points in April. They may feel bigger, but the reality is 3 points is massive at any time. But now, if you're in that bottom four or five, and you know how difficult that National League is with it, I'm looking at... I watched part of the Wrexham game last night on the television. I'm looking out how good it is. I'm looking out but how hard it would be if you go there. I think you would be able to say to your players, you're fighting for your lives. It's not done deal, but you're fighting for your lives here.
I'll just finish those fixtures off. Seventh place Salford at home to Sutton United, and Northampton in third go to reasonably resurgent Stockport County. Steve, you... may have blown your chances of ever getting a knighthood, but it is always a pleasure to have you on the official EFL podcast. Thank you very much, and congrats on the FA Cup win, and as importantly, on that new contract and the great work you're doing.
And Clem, what I will add to this is, before we went to Villa, Prince William would have never heard my name in his life. I bet you knew it on Sunday evening.
I think Prince William knows more than we could possibly know. And we'll just leave that hanging in the air.
I think there's an execution coming. An execution.
Well, let's be frank, Steve. There's been a few wanting to do that over the last 20 years, hasn't there?
He's having one of those big hall events and they're all turning up and, you know, they're going to just carve me. But you know what? We're very humble to have beaten Aston Villa. We need to be focused for Harrogate, because I told our players when we trained on Monday and Tuesday, that will be tougher than what Villa was, because mentally we need to be right.
Off to the tower, my boy. Catch you later, Steve. Thank you.
Thanks, Clem.
What a great week he's had. That is it for this episode. What a great couple of guests we've had. Thank you to Steve Evans and to Liam Rossini. If you've enjoyed it, then please do give us a 5-star rating, press the subscribe button and share on your socials. If you'd like to get in touch, our email address is podcast@efl.com. That's podcast@efl.com. I'm Mark Clement. Join us again soon for another episode of
The Official EFL Podcast.